Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome to the Believe in Vanderbilt Football podcast on the Believe Podcast Network. Anchor down. Here in Nashville, I'm Matt Perkins. I appreciate you being here with me today, so don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. You know the drill. On today's show, we're going to be taking a look at new offensive coordinator Todd Fitch, who comes over from Louisiana Tech and brings some interesting schemes and concepts, but has a bit of a questionable track record. Before we are joined once again by my good friend Coach Corey Burton, we can't forget to... Corey, how you doing today?
Man, I couldn't be better. We're talking about football. Even in these trying, unprecedented times, it's good to get in and talk a little ball. And so I'm fired up, and Vandy fans, you should be too.
Well, I think that there is a lot to look forward to when the college football season happens in whatever form it happens. But one of the big offseason storylines was Coach Mason getting rid of both of his coordinators pretty late in the offseason, you know, during the middle of bowl season when the Doors were not playing. He replaced Gary Gadowski with Todd Fitch, and Todd Fitch is, you know, very much like our friend Ted Roof, someone who has a lot of experience. And Coach Mason is clearly leaning into this idea of experience on the sidelines. And I think that that could pay real dividends for this team, Coach. But schematically, what is he going to bring to Nashville to jumpstart an offense that, frankly, has not really been able to get off the ground in a couple of years?
Well, I think if you trace the lineage of Vanderbilt offense, and I think you've been to enough games now to know that what is the one adjective that you would use to describe Vanderbilt's offense up until now? Vanilla. Okay, so what Todd Fitch is going to bring, simply put, is that he is very creative, he's very innovative, and I think that with the stints that he's had as offensive coordinator, and even in the less successful stints, I think that he has learned and gotten better at every stop. And most notably, or most recently at Louisiana Tech, he ranked 37th in total offense, which I think he was averaging 436 yards a game, 32 points a game. And I believe in the passing game, they had about 64% completion percentage. So he's highly efficient. And I think that comes with him just understanding the flow of a game and understanding that, hey, I'm not going to run to set up the pass or pass to set up the run. I'm just going to manipulate different players on the defense and put people in conflict. And I think that's starting to become an overarching philosophy because, you know, coming into this year and just kind of the what you would guess, Matt, as base philosophies is, well, I'm a run first guy, or I'm Mike Leach. I'm gonna throw the ball, sling the ball around the yard, which that, you know, the common fan is thinking, okay, well, he's a run first guy. So if we don't see 70% run, then, you know, this guy's full of, you know what. So what you're starting to see now philosophy wise, and Ted Roof, we talked about him as being, I'm going to fit my scheme around my players. Todd Fitch is not necessarily like that. He's like that in a very, very small way in which, scheme-wise, schematically-wise, he's going to find the soft spots in the defense. He's going to find different ways to put perimeter defenders in conflict, and he's going to make them wrong every single time, which is why you saw they racked up a lot of yards, which is why you saw they scored a lot of points. And if you watch their highlights, he's got guys running wide open. He's got wide open run lanes. They're making big. They're a big play offense that that hits on all that when they're on, they are on fire. And I actually watched the Texas game because I wanted to see kind of how they did against a Power Five opponent. And even though they were overwhelmed, and I think a lot of that was strength and conditioning and recruiting, they moved the ball on Texas, and they moved it almost effortlessly, if that's possible. Now that, of course, Texas defense made a few big plays and put it behind the sticks, but they were able to recover. So Matt, they have a on paper, like I guess if you're game planning against Louisiana Tech, they appear to have a very complex passing scheme, which if you really look at it, they mix and match concepts as far as single route concepts. They have when they go 3-by-1, they have tags for the solo guy. So they have a lot of single concepts over there, which is quick game type stuff. Or if a team's very super aggressive in man coverage, they might have a double move scheme built in. And then they have, I think they have a list of 6 different concepts, and they can have some variations within those 6 concepts that they have. And they usually tag the concept, and then if they want to vary that concept, they will tag the inside routes as well. So it's just a complex communication scheme in which they can dictate kind of where they attack by just adding a word. And it looks like it's a completely new scheme, which it's not.
So how hard is that going to be to pick up for the players who have, you know, been under obviously a very different system for the past couple seasons?
As far as learning the concepts, not very much time, but as far as developing the timing of running those routes, that'll take a minute. And with the circumstances the way they are, Matt, I think you're going to see a lot of growing pains. And as they're getting their timing, as they start to click, it'll get better and better and better, I think.
I certainly hope so. Because obviously when you have coordinator change, and we have it here on both sides of the ball, but especially on the offensive side of the ball, those, you know, spring ball typically is where you really get to sort of just learn and grow as a team. And it is really difficult, obviously, with there being no spring ball. Obviously, summer camp is going to be a protracted
Well, what was good, Matt, is that Vanderbilt was able to get a few practices in before they shut everything down.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So so they've at least got a couple of days of install in. So they've got the base concepts in. So they're ahead of the game in that regard. So, but what does that mean with the growing pains? We don't know, because again, they've got new players in a lot of different spots. I mean, they lose a ton of talent going off that offense, namely Keyshawn Vaughn and Pinckney, who I think was there for 12 years.
Felt like it.
They're going to be sorely missed. Kalijah Lipscomb.
You know, you're bringing a new quarterback in Deuce Williams, who – you know, was a highly ranked recruit, but there's a lot of unknown with him.
Yeah, there's a lot of unknown everywhere. So that's good news and bad news, because you're young. It's going to be bad news at the beginning of the year, but as they grow, I mean, the circumstances are going to level the playing field a lot. So you've got that as not necessarily an advantage, but it's not as big of a disadvantage. Because a lot of people are in the same boat, even if they have experienced rosters, they're in the same boat because they just don't get those extra practices. And so it's not as big of a gap. So as you grow, this team could become nasty within a couple of years if everything stays in place, which I think Todd Fitch is going to show that he's with his, you know, he's creative, he's innovative, he has a good flow of the game, he has a good understanding of the game and kind of how to manipulate a defense now, because he's seen so many different fronts that he knows he can anticipate what they're going to do. So I think it's exciting. I think it's something that, you know, after game two, if you're judging the offense after game two, you know, you may need to pump the brakes on that a little bit because it may not, it's definitely not going to be the same as it's going to be in week 10. And, you know, I've been on a show talking about Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss, and it's the same way because there's so much timing involved in this offense in a different way than Lane Kiffin's offense down at Ole Miss. But still, there's an immense level of timing because there's so many variations of the passing game. He's not necessarily fit into a box of run to pass, pass to run. You know, there's not a certain percentage. He's just going to do what's it. He may run more one game. He may throw more one game. He may be even one game. He may be more run heavy in the first half. He may be more run heavy. You don't know because you don't know how the flow of the game is going to go. So to judge it after a few games is probably not going to be fair. Understand that it's going to develop, or it should develop, and the timing should get there. And it should, by the time they hit the meat of their conference schedule, they should be moving the ball, putting some points up, and working towards getting those wins. So does Derek Mason have the luxury of waiting for all of that? I don't know. He may, Matt, I don't know if you have any inkling on it. I think he bought himself some time by hiring some new coordinators. He's not, depending on who you ask, he's not necessarily in great standing with some fans.
But I think he's in good standing with the administration, and at this point, that matters more.
Exactly
for him.
And the pressure's mounting. If we're being honest, the pressure's mounting.
Well, of course, the pressure's mounting. After you go 3-9, the pressure's always going to mount.
Exactly.
But I think that for better or for worse, you know, unless they are winless this year, I think you can throw a lot of stuff out the door because of COVID. And my biggest concern with the Bill Fitch hiring is, you know, obviously he's been in the game of football coaching in the collegiate ranks for 35 years, but he spent 19 of those years with a member of the Holtz family, Lou Skip or both. And his greatest successes have all been with Skip Holtz. You think of the ECU run in the late 2000s, then South Florida in the early 2010s, Louisiana Tech over the last four seasons. You know, those have been his best successes, and those have all been right alongside Skip Holtz. And so, you know, the thing is that when they were apart from each other, they both failed. So they got back together at Louisiana Tech in 2016. And, you know, either there was some magic in the water in Ruston, or those two have a chemistry, and breaking them up might be, maybe this time we will see, you know, who the brains of the operation was, because his stint at Boston College was not the prettiest.
No, it wasn't. And there's a lot of factors. There's a lot of factors going to everything. Let's just be real about that. But also, let's be real that there is a legitimate concern that the same with Ted Roof, but there's a legitimate concern that this guy can't function without Skip Holtz, and who's really running the show. And we don't know what we're going to get in that regard. Hopefully for Vandy's sake, that at least part of that rubbed off on him. And at least after spending all this time and after the learning experience in 2015 at Boston College, where it didn't go so well, maybe he picked up a few things, like with Ed Orgeron. Let's look at Ed Orgeron as an example. It's slightly different, but walk with me here. Ed Orgeron, Ole Miss, disaster. Correct me if I'm wrong. Right.
I mean, disaster is a pretty strong term. So, yeah, that's appropriate.
Yeah. Disaster. OK. Goes to, you know, bounces around. At some point ends up at USC. Late Lane Kiffin gets fired. The position of interim head coach comes available and they pass him up. Again, his reputation is a disaster. You know, he's a loose cannon. Well, he comes to LSU. He ends up at LSU. Interim job comes up again. He gets it. Well, he's probably, you know, fortunately for him, and fortunately now for LSU because they got a national championship, he learned from his mistakes, and he allowed himself to get the interim job. And then he made some mistakes along the way when he got the permanent head job at LSU. And then he learned from those again and actually hired a great offensive staff. And you get what you got in 2019 with probably one of the most productive offenses in the history of college football with Joe Burrow and all the first round receivers that they had. So going back now, how does that apply to Todd Fitch? Well, maybe he takes that, we'll call it a disaster. Maybe that's too harsh.
The 2015 Boston College offense was pretty bad. I mean, that was a team that went, I think, 3-9 and lost their last 7 or 8 games.
I think they averaged less than 14 points a game or something stupid like that. And it was really bad.
When that season, they were 125th in total offense, 124th in passing offense, 120th in scoring offense, averaging 17.2 points per game. And that included a 76-0 victory over Howard. So you take that out and, you know, they only beat one FBS team in Northern Illinois. Their other two wins were over Maine and Howard.
Yeah, and you take out the 100 points they scored against those two teams, and it gets really abysmal. So how does that apply now? Well, maybe he learned some things from that, and maybe he, in his latest stint with Skip Holtz, maybe he's going to put it all together. You certainly hope so. And we don't know because we weren't down in Ruston. I don't have a connection down in Ruston. I don't believe you do.
No, I don't, unfortunately.
I don't know. You might surprise me. I don't know. So we don't know how much of it was, you know, was Skip driving this whole thing? Was Todd Fitch? Did Todd Fitch actually have full control? We don't know. But guess what? We're going to find out.
We're going to find out. And on top of that, I think that either way, his offensive scheme has grown leaps and bounds in the last 4 seasons. And I feel like he is a different coordinator than he was even, the first time around with Skip, and definitely a different person than he was at Boston College. So I feel like, you know, a lot of time, you know, everyone these days is hiring the young, hot coordinator, right? The young, hot up and coming position coach should be the next coordinator. You know, we're seeing guys, you know, hiring coordinators who are 27, 28 years old, that kind of thing. And, you know, there is something to be said for that. But I also think that there is, especially at a school like Vanderbilt, something to be said for someone who has the experience of, you know, having molded and worked with a lot of different kind of players in their careers and, you know, having, you know, sort of changed their approach to the game, being able to marry those two things in, you know, the challenge of SEC football, obviously being a bit of an optimist, you know, you never know what could happen. But I do feel like that there are at least the seeds of a successful offensive scheme here now, depending on how long it's going to take to get that to mesh with the talent and the current, you know, pandemic situation leaves a lot to the unknown. But at the same time, there is definite reason for optimism here.
And we're about to see how good his time management, just to piggyback on that, we're about to see how good his time management is going to be given the circumstances. So, but I think for Vanderbilt, this is a very, very good hire because it is a risky hire, but it's a risky hire that could pay off. And I mean, Vanderbilt was 3-9 last year. So really, what direction do you have to go? I mean, you lose, you get your butt kicked against UNLV at home. I mean, you can only go up from there. So why not hire a guy with a ton of experience that's been successful recently? Yeah, he has a couple black eyes, mostly looking at the Boston College years. Or year, or whatever you want to call that.
Well, it's 3 years there, but 1 year as the nominal offensive coordinator.
Yeah, and it was a It was an utter disaster. So, like I said, describe that stint however you want to describe it. 3 years felt like one. It was bad. I don't know. But that's the risk you have to take if you're 3-9 Vanderbilt.
You know, I do think, though, that one guy who's got to be really excited about this, though, is Mike Wright, the incoming true freshman quarterback coming out of College Park, Georgia at Woodward Academy. He is, you know, he was a, you know, borderline top 10 quarterback in this recruiting class. And he is someone that, you know, I feel like, you know, had he had a full full summer camp, maybe could take the reins pretty early on. But he is someone that could really, I feel like, thrive in Fitch's system.
Yeah, I mean, let's not beat around the bush here. I think, you know, I think he's a smart guy. Woodward Academy is a great school. I mean, he's a guy that could probably honestly come in and compete right away. I think he's somebody, I feel like, you know, you're not, you don't become that successful and not be able to pick up the offense right away. You know, I think he's somebody that could latch on and do some big things.
Yeah, so obviously Deuce Wallace will get the first crack of it come fall camp, but nonetheless, it will be interesting to see what Mike Wright can do during his time on campus. So with that, that's going to wrap it up for us here today. So, Coach, thank you so much for joining me to talk coordinators. I really appreciate your time. And we will catch all of you guys next time on the Believe in Vanderbilt Football podcast on the Believe Podcast Network. Anchor down.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.